London is the perfect example of what a modern dystopia looks like. Homelessness and gang violence has gone through the roof, whilst housing and transport have become completely unaffordable. The high wages that used to draw people to the city have been stagnant for years, and despite this, more people flood in every day looking for work and opportunity, either from the rest of the country or from abroad. With London's infrastructure and social cohesion reaching a breaking point, how did it ever get so bad here? What led to the abject poverty in the UK's capital and the economic heart of the world? And what lies in store for London's future? Let's find out. To understand the London of today and what went so horribly wrong, we need to look back into its history. As the seat of the British Empire, London became the largest and richest city in the world. The raw products and resources of a third of the world was funneled into London, feeding a massive industrial sector that made Britain the strongest and wealthiest nation in the world. But after two world wars and the near complete dismantling of its empire, Britain's domination of the world came to an end. Both the country and the capital had to adapt, but even if they didn't have their colonies anymore, the UK still had all the advantages it needed. With first Britain and then the US's global dominance, English became the standard international language for business, trade, science, and education. With their connections to Europe, former colonies, and the US, London became a middle ground between all of these different parts of the world, and it was these factors that enabled the UK to transition from a production economy into one based almost entirely on services. The most important jewel in the UK's crown was their financial industry. During the war, when the UK had borrowed trillions of dollars in today's money from the US, New York had briefly taken over as the financial centre of the world, but the two cities had a key difference, one which would ensure London wouldn't lose its spot at the top for long. In New York and across the US, the financial sector was much more strictly watched and regulated. At least in those days, the US government kept a watchful eye on their banks and their stockbrokers. London, being the only other Alpha Plus Plus city, barely had any limits on what you could do with your money. The UK's government barely had any control over it. Instead, the financial sector resided in the so-called City of London. Separate from what you'd understand today as the UK's capital, the City of London exists as a tiny, mostly self-governing enclave at the heart of the wider city. Governed by a medieval system of different business interests, the City of London made sure that their resident banks didn't have any interference or regulation from the government. The lower taxes and the relaxed attitude to financial crime meant that more investors chose the UK over America to store their money. New York is the only other Alpha Plus Plus city, and between these Alpha Plus Plus cities, London just seemed like the much easier option. As the decades went past, the financial sector boomed in London, and other sectors like manufacturing or mining withered and dried up. The UK was keen to accelerate this process. In the 80s, whilst the UK's government was breaking unions and shutting down mines across the country, they were giving the banks as much leeway as they possibly could. In 86, they got rid of the last of the meaningful protections and limits, deregulating the entire UK stock exchange.
She introduced free market policies that helped the country throw off its post-war malaise and shook up the banking world with a flurry of deregulation, making London one of the world's most important financial centres.
It was the final nail in the coffin, ensuring the UK's financial sector would become its most valuable industry by a wide margin. Of course, all of this was centred in London. Trillions of pounds were flowing in, but most of it stayed in the capital, funding the creation of massive glass skyscrapers and not much else. Meanwhile, the rest of the UK suffered. The mines, factories, and other staples of the British economy were washed away in this wave of deindustrialization. The UK was already built around London, with all of the trains and roads designed with it as the centre. But this shift meant that the wages and opportunities in London were just far more desirable than the rest of the country. While the population of the city had been falling for decades after the war, in the 90s, it started to rise uncontrollably. From around 6 million to nearly 9 million people today. But the problem with this is knowing what's even true and what's not, as so many media companies in the UK report on these events differently depending on their political bias. Luckily, there's an amazing solution to this, to always be informed on the truth: Ground News. Check them out today at ground.news/moon, because Ground News gathers news from 50,000 sources around the world every day, allowing you to see all the different articles reporting on a story and the political bias of each source. For example, take this story about the UK's crackdown on immigration. You can see that the right-leaning sources are reporting on this story more than the left and the centre. The left emphasises the redeployment of civil servants and describes the current left-wing Labour government's plans in a broader political view, whereas the right shows the specific targets and the operations mechanics. As you can see, they emphasized the crackdown on criminal gangs more prominently with stronger language, such as illegal immigration blitz and smash the criminal gangs, suggesting a more aggressive approach by the government. And if you want any more information on this story, you can click any of these articles to read from the original source. Personally, one of my favorite features with Ground News is their My News Bias feature, which provides you with a personal dashboard where you can get insight to your reading habits. And you get to see all the news that you consume to see where you're really getting your information from and if you have any blind spots. This really allows me to sometimes see my own personal bias when making these videos so that I can reconsider other views to be better informed, as getting rid of blind spots is really important with this stuff. So become better informed today by using Ground News, and if you use my link in the description, you'll get 40% off unlimited access this month. But this deregulation had other effects, not just on the rest of the country, but on the kind of money flowing into the city. The lack of regulation and oversight, combined with the sheer volume of transactions and deals going on, made London a paradise for money laundering. It didn't matter who you were or where your wealth came from. The City of London would happily accept your money, no questions asked. The depth and depravity of this becomes clear when you look at how closely entwined London has become with global organised crime. In 2012, HSBC, the largest UK bank, was fined £1.2 billion for laundering drug money from the Sinaloa cartel, the most powerful drug cartel in the world. If the fine was £1.2 billion, you can only assume they made 10 times that much in profits before they got caught. The Russian oligarch Roman Abramovich's story is an essential example of just how exploitable London really is. His multi-billion fortune originated in the breakup of the USSR and the pillaging of state assets that came with it. With a bid of just $100 million in a rigged auction, he gained control of an oil company that now extracts $3 billion worth of oil every single year. But what was a Russian oligarch meant to do with his countless billions? Well, the City of London was happy to provide a solution. As well as laundering his money, they also facilitated the purchases of whatever he wanted from the UK. He bought luxury apartments and mansions in the heart of London, a vast array of smaller properties for him to rent out, and even an entire Premier League football team. It only ended for Roman when the UK had to look like they were being tough on Russian oligarchs and they confiscated a bunch of his public holdings. But it's doubtful they got all of it. The regulation was so lax that anyone could anonymously buy properties worth millions if they had the right connections. It was all a game for bankers, a way to make a commission by auctioning off the most valuable parts of the country. The UK's government was completely complicit. They even offered people with over 2 million invested in the UK so-called golden visas, a free pass to live in the UK and buy whatever they wanted. For every high profile case like Roman Abramovich, there's hundreds or thousands of lesser international criminals and tycoons buying out the rest of London and the UK. In fact, the UK's actually handed out over 6,000 golden visas. Over half of the recipients are now under investigation for national security risks. It's estimated that over £1 billion worth of London property is owned by money launderers, and that around £90 billion is illicitly laundered through London and the UK every year. It makes up 40% of the world's total dirty money, nearly all laundered in just a few square miles of land. So why did all of this matter for London? It's the root of the housing crisis that has only gotten worse for the city. Land in the UK has always been more scarce than in other countries because of how dense the population is, especially in London. These foreign and anonymous investors only made things worse, using their dirty money or their offshore accounts to buy up the few houses that were left. Often these were left empty for months or even years, quietly rising in value because of the artificial scarcity. London's housing market then transformed from a way for people to get a home into an investment arena for millionaires and billionaires of the world. And the worse it got, the higher the prices went and the more profitable it became for the people who owned all of the properties. And this bubble doesn't seem like it's going to be popped anytime soon, especially if they keep control, as it would cost them all far too much money. Tragically, London has tried to deal with this overcrowding problem before. In the 60s and the 70s, the government had constructed massive blocks of flats to replace the old Victorian slums. At first, they were safe, peaceful communities where everyone pitched in to keep the area well maintained. The government's right to buy program was a big reason for this. It let residents buy the houses and flats back from the government at a discount, getting them invested in their community. But over time, these brutalist blocks of concrete fell into disrepair. London's local governments began using them as dumping grounds for the homeless and the disenfranchised, without giving them any reason to care about the properties themselves. Meanwhile, those people who had their lives together and were trying to contribute to society were left out to dry. They didn't have enough money for a deposit, but their lives were too put together to qualify for free housing. Other blocks of flats went the opposite direction. construction. As the city expanded, some areas of the city like Tamemead or Finsbury, which used to be council estates, slowly got bought out by private developers and were sold as luxury flats. As the prices went up and the gentrification began, it pushed out all the old working class residents. Flats sold to families for $50,000 a couple of decades before would then get sold for 10 or 20 times that amount. It wasn't just limited to the estates and the tower blocks, the whole of London was suffering from the housing crisis. From 1995 to 2020, the average house price in London rose by over £400,000. Wages, on the other hand, stagnated. The average house price rose from around 4 years of the average salary in the mid-90s to nearly 10 years worth of wages by 2022. This had an awful effect on people's living conditions. Instead of getting the house they needed for their family, people have been forced into tiny flats. It's hard to overstate how bad this is for people. Overcrowding makes you much more likely to be depressed, which means that it just makes life worse in general. It can all be boiled down to a problem of supply and demand. The speculation from investors, combined with the overcrowding and influx of people, meant demand skyrocketed. But the supply couldn't keep up, even going down in some areas. The past 15 years have seen the government crack down on spending, cutting public services, and stalling the construction of new government housing. Lots of the estates that were still there got bulldozed to make way for larger luxury flats. Others were bought solely to remain empty, waiting for the prices to go even higher. As of 2022, there are nearly 35,000 unoccupied homes in the UK's capital, and those are only the ones that have been empty for over 6 months. The privately owned houses that are occupied have their rent put up every year. Even honest landlords just keeping up with the markets make them unaffordable for regular people. The ones who aren't honest, like the corporate investors buying single-family homes by the dozen, have even more room to exploit their tenants. The idea of exploiting an already unfair market to drive prices even higher is at the core of modern London. Take the public transport system. Compared to the rest of the world, London's tube is generally average to above average when it comes to things like speed and reliability. For an adequate performance, you'd expect a normal price. Instead, the tube is the most expensive metro system in the world for its passengers. It's double the world average. In 2022, riding the tube from one side of the city to the other cost just under £5. Mexico City system only charges 20p for a similar trip. A monthly ticket was £360 in 2022. In Tokyo, the same kind of season ticket was just a third of the price. Transport costs in London get so bad that finding a house becomes a game of setting the cost of rent against the cost of transport. Sometimes a cheaper place to stay in the suburbs ends up costing more than somewhere closer to the centre purely because of the transport. It's a consequence of how the system is funded. Whilst other countries use their taxes to maintain and keep infrastructure running, most of the funding for the tube comes from the tickets. As the system gets older and more decrepit, and as more people flood into the capital, it costs more and more to maintain every year. It's this overpopulation which is slowly choking the tube system, but trying to use the roads is even slower and still so much more expensive. London with its age was designed for horses and carriages, not cars. The roads are very narrow, most barely able to fit two lanes of traffic. Add in a labyrinth of roundabouts, junctions and traffic lights, and you're left with one of the worst cities for driving in the world. It means that even outside of rush hour, it can take hours to get through the city centre by car. And London's always been proud of this. If you look at this old poster from the 1970s, they show what London would look like with similar roads as Los Angeles. But without an updated modern transport system, this may just end up more likely. It's also really expensive as well. London's local governments are hungry for cash, so they'll give big fines against people for trivial things like going just 1 mile per hour above the speed limit. Then there's the controversial ULEZ charges. The ultra low emission zone scheme means that any car that wasn't made to high environmental standards costs drivers £12.50 a day. Transport is just one example of how expensive everything is in London. Another is the cultural life of the city. London used to be one of the best cities in the world for nightlife and live music, but not really anymore. The nightclubs, bars and pubs nearly all exist on the edge of bankruptcy. Massive rents and falling numbers of customers have cut tons of small businesses out of the market. And you may be thinking, so why aren't people going? Well, that's yet again because of the prices. The average cost of a beer in London is £6.75, with fancier drinks costing so much more on top of that. Tickets to see live music or other cultural events also cost far more than they used to, locking a whole class of people out of having a good night out.
I don't go out because I don't have the funds to go out. It's your heating, your eating, your showers, or food.
Compared to the rest of the country, living in London is around 50 to 60% more expensive compared to other British cities, and it's getting worse every day. Over the past 4 years alone, the cost of living in London has risen by 25%. Wages, of course, haven't been close to keeping pace. In fact, they're actually going backwards. Accounting for inflation and the cost of living, Londoners have seen their wages go down rather than up on average. And to add on to all of these costs, local governments are so strapped for cash that they'll take any excuse to squeeze more money out of the people. The results speak for themselves. Over the pandemic, around 25% of London was living in poverty, with 1 in 20 in danger of going hungry, they're so poor. For one of the richest cities, an Alpha Plus Plus city, in one of the richest countries in the world, this is really a disgrace. It seems like poverty itself should be the most obvious cause of crime. Those who don't have what they need are more likely to take it. But when you compare the statistics, poverty has no effect on lots of crimes, including homicide. Instead, it's only local income inequality that makes all kinds of crime more likely, from petty crimes and theft to more serious violent offences. This is because of the crippling effect inequality has on people and how they view the world. In an unequal society, the success of the top 10% is constantly present in the media and in the world itself. People see the lives they could be living and the comfort they could have, but without real opportunities to get that wealth, it's only a cruel reminder of what they can't have. At the same time, the poverty and the lack of structure means there isn't the same societal limits. Young people growing up on these estates aren't constrained by their education or their relationship with the community. In lots of these cases, the community and even the family unit has broken down under the strain of poverty. It means there isn't anything else to ground their identity, and this is what gangs offer. It gives people an identity, a uniform, a social ladder to climb up, and even a reason to exist. It's promoted in the UK media, with the massive rise of drill music, glorifying knife crime and gang activity. But it makes it all seem cool, and all of this is stuff that's never offered to these people anywhere else. Nasty, violent, and criminal people will always exist. Obviously, gang members aren't blameless victims, but whether they'll learn how to function in society is decided by the situation they grew up in. It's the criminals at the top that create the criminals at the bottom through how they've exploited London. The inequality, the estates, the poverty, all of this creates the impression of a world of poverty without any way to escape. So in this situation, people create their own hierarchy. They compete with each other over the few resources that are left to them, which in London's case means joining a gang and controlling the drug supply. And with heaps of immigrants from places all around the world, all these criminals pouring into London make it so that criminal activity is even more competitive, and thus more violent and more profitable. Now you see, in the centre of the city and in the outer suburban sprawl, London does seem incredibly safe. But as Ed Sheeran said on the Theo Von podcast, in every area of London is a really dark side.
Every area of London, literally every area, is sketchy. The nice areas are sketchy, the bad areas are sketchy.
But the root of all of this seems to be in the lower income neighbourhoods, out of the main ring of London, where each estate functions like its own territory, coming under the control of its own gang. These gangs then compete with each other, either over who controls the drug trade or just to have a reason to exist. It's the conflict itself that keeps the gangs going. A never-ending feud called the postcode wars. Young men growing up on the estates are constantly surrounded by it and indoctrinated into becoming soldiers. It's the only way they think they can achieve success in their own world and find respect amongst their peers, with their music and culture all promoting this lifestyle. For all their lives, they've only scraped by, and so crime seems to be the only route to fast cash. In 2021, a typical year for the postcode wars, 30 teenagers lost their lives. Most of these crimes were committed with knives, which actually makes the problem seem smaller than it really is when you just look at fatalities. The majority of attacks aren't lethal, with only 1 in 66 on average leading to the victim passing away. But instead, they're left with life-changing injuries. Knife crime has gone up by over 90% between 2011 and 2021. As a result of increasing gang activity, and it's still rising today. And because of this, it's proliferating into all of London, like Ed Sheeran said. Which is why you see videos where you see random guys getting stopped by police who literally carry full-blown machetes while walking around. There are countless stories of people just randomly getting knifed in London. It got so bad that the murder rate in London was actually higher than New York at one point. And it's all gotten this bad, not just because of the lack of cohesion, the transient lifestyle of London, and the huge demand for certain drugs like cocaine, but one of the main core reasons is that London has been unable to deal with the consequences of its own inequality. The police are so poorly funded and overstretched, they barely even venture into the estates. A massive amount of gang violence goes completely unsolved. Even if they did catch them, the UK is currently facing a huge overcrowding problem in the prisons. It's gone to the ridiculous point where violent criminals are now getting incredibly short sentences or no punishment at all, just because there isn't space for them. In fact, only recently, a bunch of violent criminals were released from prison, way before they were supposed to be released. Added onto that is the fact that the police in the UK are not respected. They're almost seen as a joke by almost everyone in the UK, and almost no crime gets solved here. It's only by reversing this inequality, harsher punishments, stricter laws, and giving the police the resources they need that London would ever get better. But as things stand, it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon.